This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Twain famously called traveling fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Especially in today's globalized society, the ability to travel and the benefits of it have never been more understood. Today, in her vantage, the show all about women of influence and leadership, I'm here with Karenisa Zabidi, a travel aficionado and recent returning to the corporate world, to talk about all her experiences and why she's so passionate about the wonders of traveling for women. And of course, Karenisa also has a job as a sustainability consultant at PwC Malaysia. And I know we will talk about how you are speaking at Sofico X, right? But before that, this love for traveling started at 11?
Very young, yes.
Okay, so let's go back. 11, what were you doing? And semi-solo in that way.
Yes. So my parents were the sort of parents that wanted everything for us, as most parents do. And they had listed us in as many classes as they could. So the one organization that I kind of stuck with was this organization called the Children's Environmental Heritage Foundation. So it was a lot of camping trips, a lot of environmental awareness, experiential learning. And so one of the earlier trips I went when I was quite young was to Perth. Mm. And the group of us were visited an environmental school called John Woodbury School of the Environment. And we stayed for about 10 days. We did some sailing. We did some hunting. And it was a lot of fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I know, and that's the thing, right? Now in sustainability, and to think that was something that was planted at the age of 11.
Very young.
And
yes,
of course, also encouraged by the parents. And also at 14, where did you go to?
So I think it started off once you get hooked with travel, you just can't shake it off. It gets in your blood, right? But it's the same with sustainability or any kind of interest you're passionate about. And so I think by the time I was in my mid-teens, I remember getting tired of sitting around in a circle singing Kumbaya and thought I wanted to do something more. And so I ended up in Kuala Gula with some 30 Malaysians and Singaporeans with Raleigh International, looking at ecotourism as a way to protect the local environment at the Kuala Gula. Mm. And so it was a charcoal industry growing, but because of the industry, the environment was deteriorating and it was a stop for migratory birds. So we wanted to encourage the locals to get involved in ecotourism so that they can protect the area and protect the environment, essentially.
Right. Okay. So, it's funny, like right now you're in sustainability as well. So over the years that you traveled, what have been some of the highlights?
So shortly after, so the work that I did with Raleigh led me to be appointed as a Bayer Young Environmental Envoy quite in my late teens. And that work ended up with me then appointed as the British Council Climate Champion. And I ended up in the UN. And so representing Southeast Asia.
Late teens. Young,
late teens, yes.
Okay.
So maybe 20, maybe 20, 21, late teens. Yeah, but around that time, you know, I was doing a lot of work on the ground. And at the UN, it's interesting because I think a lot of young people don't realize the potential they have until they see that what others can do. And I think travel is similar. You know, you hold yourself back because you don't think, I can do it. Mm. But when you're plugged into a community that has got it done, then you're like, I can do this too. And so climate change was like that for me. And at the UN, there weren't many young Southeast Asians that were representing this region. Mm. And if you look at equity, or at least the kind of voice that young people have, you see that it's very skewed towards the global north, where Western countries that have more capacity to negotiate end up being heard a lot more than those from developing countries. Mm. And it was the same with the youth climate movement as well. But I think being plugged into a part of that global network of young people that weren't afraid to stand up and speak for themselves and say, hey, you're signing off my future. The decisions you're making today will affect me long after you're dead and buried. It was something quite inspiring. And I met a group of young Australians that had traveled overland from Australia to Poland, which I suppose subconsciously made me realized that it was possible to do it. Yeah.
Okay, so then you're a Chevening graduate. What do you call that? A Chevening fellow?
A Chevening scholar, yes.
A Chevening scholar. And of course, you just came back from the UK last year. Now, you traveled back from London to KL with your 3-year-old and 5-year-old then, that was last year, over land, crossing 11 international borders and 8 time zones over 30 days. I can understand the adventure of doing it alone. I don't understand the adventure of doing it with a 3-year-old and 5-year-old. What was that like?
So it wasn't the hardest trip, first of all. I think the first trip we went to, the three of us, was a Euro trip. We did Brussels. We did London to Brussels by bus. And then we did Brussels to Paris by train.
Okay.
And then we flew to Milan. So that trip, my daughter was 1. She was 2 and my son was 4. And we were supposed to go as a family with my husband, but he had exams at the last minute, said I can't commit, and I had to make a decision. Do I go with the kids or do I skip the trip, right? Decided to go.
Okay.
And it was, you know, I expected it to be coming home, here, have the kids, I didn't want to see them for 2 weeks, you know, but it wasn't like that at all. It was tough, yes, because my daughter was still in diapers. She still had milk bottles on her. Some of the flights were really tough to take because, you know, we were taking low-cost carriers as poorly students.
You're right.
And so we had to travel a long way to get to these airports in the middle of nowhere. And it was a difficult trip because we were changing different kinds. We did boats, we did trains, we did buses, we did all of it. We did planes. It was a nightmare.
Planes, trains, and automobiles.
Yes.
Okay.
But this trip, the Trans-Siberian, wasn't as difficult as people would think because, first of all, it's a train trip. You literally get on the platform, get off the platform, and as long as you make it on time, really, there's no concern. But we were going home, and the kids have called London home for many years. And so there was some resistance about going back.
Right.
And so
to a country they don't know, in their world, their whole life.
Exactly. It's been abroad. So we lived in Jakarta for 2 years before that and in London for 2 years. And so for a 4- and 6-year-old, that's their world. So my son learned to ride a bike in London, went to school for the first time. Both of them went to school for the first time in the UK. And so that was home for them. And it was summer holidays, and I thought, okay, let's go somewhere fun. And we looked at our options, and I'm like, look, it's expensive everywhere. let's see if we can do this trip.
So the 3-year-old, what was that like? I mean, you know, for her to travel over 30 days and all that, it's a she,
yeah.
So she took it in her stride. And I suppose that's sort of training that and ingraining that in them as well.
Yeah, so I'm a free-range parent. People ask me what that is. But essentially, it's just trusting the kids that they need to experience life to learn. So I don't rescue them from things they know they can handle themselves or even things like getting themselves into fights. Or I think it's important for them to learn conflict resolution.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'm not one of those parents who would pick them up when
not
they fall.
Not a helicopter.
No.
Okay.
I mean, I'm there. I make sure that they're in a safe environment. Mm. But essentially, if, you know, they're climbing a big wall and if they fall, you'll know it hurts and you won't do it again, you know? So
okay.
What that's done was to train my kids to be really independent so they can take care of themselves. They're able to vocalize when they have issues and if they have any needs, then they tell me.
But there was a bit in that destination where you actually had, you were stopped from coming into a country.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So we traveled from London to Brussels, from Brussels to Amsterdam to Berlin. From Berlin, we went to Warsaw, and then Warsaw to Belarus.
Okay.
And so we needed to get to St. Petersburg, and we had two routes there. Either we go down south via Belarus or we go north via the Balkan states, so Estonia, Lithuania. And, you know, looking at the logistics, I'm like, I'm not going to drag, you know, 2 kids, haul them off a train twice in a day if I could do it in one. So decided to go the Belarusian route. Looked it up online and, you know, a trip like this, it's not so much about a physical kind of, you know, strain. It's about logistics. It's about making sure that you have all your visas in place, all your train tickets in place, all your hotels booked and all that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so we did the train travel from Warsaw to Belarus really early in the morning. And so by the time we reached the border, it was maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was the first state out of Europe.
Mm.
And so my phones didn't work. So the immigration police, the border control police come onto the train. They took one look at my passport and they say, no visa. cannot cross. And I'm like, hang on. Like, I looked online and it says Malaysians get a 7-day visa-free option.
Right.
And so what I didn't realize was that you can only apply for this at an international airport and not through a land border. And it was ridiculous.
Okay.
Because we got to Belarus and I saw the train I needed to get on. And I said, look, that's the train. And
I just need to cross.
Yep. I am happy to stay in your custody. I am in no threat to your country. And I had to explain this to the kids. I said, look, you know, we use a 16th century system, which requires you to have a piece of paper to tell the country that you're coming into, that you're here. And they're like, why? And I'm like, actually, you know, I don't know.
Right.
And so I think the concept of borders is something, it's a big question that we need to think about.
Okay, so then in the end, what happened?
So we were put back on a train, back to Warsaw. And I remember struggling to get all my devices plugged in because it was the end of the day and I had run out of juice. And there were no plugs in these old Russian trains. And so I remember having to put in my Malaysian SIM, pay one of those 38 ringgit roaming things and calling home and saying, I need help. So my sister booked me on a flight. I think even at that point, I was still trying not to take a flight. I'm like, I'm going to try a bus. I'm going to try another train. I'm going to try any way other than getting on a flight. But in the end, it was just too much hassle. So ended up at the airport hotel. I remember getting in at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night for a flight out in the morning.
Back to the comforts of Malaysia.
No, actually, St. Petersburg.
Okay, St. Petersburg.
Next destination.
Okay. So we'll talk a little bit more about your travels and what you'll be speaking about at Safigo X. I'm here with Khairul Nisa Zabidi from PwC Malaysia. Stay tuned to Enterprise BFM 89.9.
Backing feminist movements. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Listening to Enterprise. Good morning. This is Frida Liu and it's Her Vantage. And this is where we speak to women of influence and leadership. I'm here with Khairul Nisa Zabidi, who's a sustainability consultant at PwC Malaysia. But we're talking about her travels, something she started at 11 fairly independently. And you were last sharing with me your journey from London all the way back to Malaysia, well, almost, with lugging a three-year-old and a five-year-old. I salute you. Also, now, you will be speaking at Safigo X, in November. What will you be talking about?
So there's going to be two parts. The first is going to be a panel where we'll be talking about roles and responsibilities and whether or not this should hold you back. Because as women, you know, we are a mom, we are daughters, we are friends, we are sisters, we work. And so there's a lot of roles that we carry and we forget that there's the number one.
Yes.
It's ourselves.
Yes.
Exactly. And so
if your cup isn't full, how can you help anyone? If you don't put the mask on yourself, how can you help your children?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You need to be your best self. And so that's we're going to be discussing that in a panel. And I'll be running a workshop, maybe like a 90-minute workshop on whether or not the call of the open road and those who have been bitten by the wanderlust, the travel bug, and how you can sort of, how do you plan for a 30-day trip or 30 days or longer?
Okay, so, and you know, when you travel as well, right, what were some of the, I guess, dangers? Because traveling as a woman, there are more considerations than if you were a man, unfortunately, right? What were some of the things to look out for?
So surprisingly, I find myself in different travel situations. So I travel for work. I travel on my own with girlfriends. I'm going to Bali this weekend. I travel for leisure. I travel with my kids. And I find that actually preparation is the best key to kind of protect yourself. So information is your best protection. It's difficult, I think, sometimes traveling as a woman. I've not had a bad experience. I remember at 21, I wouldn't do this again. You know, now in retrospect.
In hindsight.
So,
silly girl.
I was traveling through to Poland, actually. And wow, that's got some, that country has something for me. So I was traveling to Poland for the UN conferences as a climate activist at the time. And I traveled through London because there are no direct flights. And so I remember staying a week and wanting to spend that time on the move. So I remember wanting to go to Manchester via York. And I got off a train at 2 o'clock in the morning. I took an overnight bus with a 6 o'clock train to Manchester. And unlike, you know, busy big cities like KL, Sydney, New York, the train station in York is dead at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's absolutely dead. And there I was, 21 years old, with my pink jacket and pink bag and, like, sitting down quietly by myself. Then this guy comes through, right? And he's, like, maybe late 20s, early 30s, long hair, dyed red, tattoos, piercings, dressed in black leather, comes over and says, you know, what's the time?
Oh.
And I go, like, oh, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. And he's, like, okay, he leaves. Comes back and says, you know, I'm waiting for a friend. I just got off work. I'm a DJ at a local bar here. Do you mind if I sit with you? So I said, sure. And we start chatting. And he goes, like, you know, have you been to York before? And he said, oh, have you seen the moat? So I said, no, I haven't. And he said, you know, there was a Duke of York. He had 10,000 men. Apparently, he built a moat around, okay, a wall around York.
Right.
He said, let's go check it out. And so we walk outside and he points it out and he goes, since you have time until 6, why don't we go for a walk?
Okay.
And I go.
Right.
And,
right.
And as I'm walking out the train station, he goes like, oh, don't worry about it. I'm not a serial killer or anything.
And yet she continues for her walk.
I continue. I go with him. And yeah, and this was an age before smartphones, before text messages where you can tell somebody that where you are. And it wasn't until he said that did I think, oh, is this a smart idea? Probably not. But I went with him. And, you know, it wasn't as bad as I thought. I could have disappeared that night and never been found. But, you know, we walked through the city in the dead of the night and he pointed out this river and he said, you know, I used to play here as kids. And he's like,
probably the best, one of the best tours. You know, I mean, there's other ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, there was this glass church. He's like, run up to it. Don't look up until you get to the door. It was the most amazing view from the bottom. And, you know, we saw the city waking up. We saw the market setting up. It was amazing. And so as much as you think that it is unsafe for women, actually being open to experiences, you know, unless people are predators, where right, they are there to look for trouble.
Okay, disclaimer, don't do this. Don't do what she did.
In hindsight, yes. Always make sure that there is, that someone knows where you are at all times.
But I kind of get it as well at the same time. You know, I'll tell you some of my travel stories off air. Okay, so you're currently working with a PwC as a sustainability consultant.
Yeah.
So a little bit of the combination of, you know, all your life, really, what you've been involved in. How do you see travel fitting into all that?
So the work I do with sustainability, it's a borderless concept, you know. Whatever happens in this part of the world, it affects someone else in another part. I was just stressing this morning, woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning thinking, goodness gracious, like we, you know, the recent IPCC report tells us that we have 12 years to tipping point.
Mm.
And so you wonder whether or not your pension is relevant at all at this point.
Use all the money now and go travel.
But yeah, it fits in very much because we were just in Singapore 2 weeks ago and I met PwC sustainability consultants from all over the world. And it's really refreshing to see that there are people pushing the boundaries, saying that there must be a new way of doing things. Mm-hmm. And I see my role as working with companies, mm-hmm, and helping them decarbonize or move towards a more sustainable kind of trajectory. And these companies are everywhere.
Right.
And so there's a lot of exchange of ideas. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of our clients have regional footprints. We are a regional firm ourselves. And so we do a lot of cross-border work, cross-territory work. A lot of the learning comes from different parts of the firm. And so we need agility to be able, okay, to do this work. Yes.
And, you know, I mean, you've been in this role for a year now. How receptive are companies? I can imagine the MNCs based here. Yes, we know we're all on that same journey. But, you know, large part of our businesses are run by SMEs, right, which are Malaysian owned. How receptive are they? How long do you think you need to have this conversation?
So the regulation is moving in that way. So Bursa has made it a requirement for companies that are listed to disclose their sustainability metrics. And what this means means is that they would need to understand what matters to their organization. If you are a developer, for example, what would be material to you would be land use, how you use your materials, how you treat your people. But if you're a bank, it would be completely different. They'll be looking at privacy, they'll be looking at data, they'll be looking at responsible financing. And so we help companies figure out what that is for them. Mm. So you're right about SMEs, that that's still largely an underserved part of the movers and shakers. But even then, I think when the big boys move and they provide some kind of
expectation
model to say that this is how things can work, and we have listed companies that are small, companies that are listed on the ACE market, for example, entrepreneurs and small businesses, and they are still required or obligated to disclose their material matters. So I think it's a new way of seeing how to do good business. Mm. And if you take sustainability into account, you're future-proofing your business.
Right. What's the three P's again?
People, planet, and profit. Yeah. But there's also so many frameworks. There's environment, social governance. There's so many ways of looking at it. Yeah.
Well, if you want to leave the planet for your children and grandchildren, yeah, it's something that we need to look at.
Absolutely.
Right?
No, it's not even that anymore. Mm. The science says that it's in our lifetime.
Right.
That it would hit. And so
you will suffer with your children. Okay. Thanks for being with us and sharing your journey. And it's been fun. I've been speaking to Khairunnisa Zabidi from PwC Malaysia, talking about travels and sustainability. This is Her Vantage on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.